Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
Definition: God is the shortest distance between zero and infinity. In which direction, one may ask? We shall reply that his first name is not Jack, but plus and minus. And one should say, plus or minus God is the shortest distance between zero and infinity, in either direction. That's Alfred Jarry, Dadaist philosopher. The first church of scientific science. And what is that? Wes, Scoop, Scoop, what is that, Scoop?
Well, it's my take on how we might ritualize and develop an organization where we could use science, which we all kind of believe in. I mean, most of us, many of us. But we haven't found a way to somehow ritualize it and make it, you know, personal, make it part of our spiritual life. So I'll read you.
Yes.
The new church made out of science, the first church of scientific science. And we'll go inside St. Isaac and Albert's Cathedral. The ceiling is a large circular planetarium, which revolves with the Earth and displays an accurate view of the heavens to the very limit of astronomical exploration. With computer graphics, the scene on the ceiling is expanding at the same rate as the universe itself. In the naves of the cathedral are holograms of the saints of science, each of them at the moment of their revelation, Heraclitus standing in his ever-changing river, Galileo looking through his telescope at the stars, Euclid with his ruler and triangle, Newton with a ripe apple on his head, Einstein at the blackboard with his chalk and pipe, Schrodinger with his cat on his shoulder, and Heisenberg looking uncertain. The stained glass windows around the chapel show us scenes from the story of evolution. Present day Homo sapiens sapiens is pictured first as you enter the church, so that as you approach the altar, you are moving backward in time. And just before you reach the altar, the second to the last of the windows shows a one-celled organism, the last window filled with a double helix strand of DNA. On stage at the back of the church, on either side of the altar, sit two giant statues, replicas of a hydrogen and helium atom. All across the back wall of the church, electrified models of other atoms, enlarged, of course, are spinning in their orbits, crashing into each other, exploding into flashes of light, and giving churchgoers a sense of the ever-changing dynamic reality of charged particles. In the center, where the crucifix or Ark of the Torah normally stands, is the sacred symbol of the first church of science. It is an emblem of six white dots on a field of black, a representation of the six known quarks, the ground of being, the holy sextet, up, down, top, bottom, strange, and charmed. Amen. The black field represents the emptiness from which it all sprang, or the black hole from which it all emerged, or perhaps the dark area, the last mystery still to be solved, the first cause. We enter the church during prayers. The congregation, all dressed in white lab coats, is reciting the liturgy, the table of basic elements. Hydrogen, helium, lithium, beryllium, boron, carbon. Special emphasis is given to the last syllable of each word, making the cathedral resonate with ums and ons. Soon the supplicants will bow their heads and pray that somebody will come up with a unified field theory. Finally, the congregation will chant the Church of Science's great mantra, a mantra that not only contains the seed syllable of the universe, but also is the name of the seed itself, the sacred mantra, Om. Atom, ahum, atom, ahum, atom, ahum.
This is great. It's great. Again, the images are sparkling.
Yes, I really love that First Church of Science. I want to go there before I die, St. Isaac's Cathedral.
Yeah, St. Isaac's and St. Albert.
St. Albert's Cathedral, yes.
Isaac Newton and Albert Einstein.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. That's perfect. So this is part of the stand-up.
That the First Church of Science actually isn't. I haven't incorporated that into my show.
Oh, okay.
But I do a whole series of stories about the nature of subatomic reality and the Big Bang and just the phenomenal discoveries that have been made and just in our lifetime. I mean, it's been so recent. You think back, it's been less than 100 years that we first discovered proof that there were other galaxies, and now we have pictures. I mean, you've seen these pictures that travel around on the internet of billions of galaxies, not solar systems, galaxies.
Yes.
And they're, you know.
And the universe continues to expand.
And the universe continues to expand. I sometimes wonder how people can sort of go on after knowing this. Or we're reading in the paper, I remember sometime in the mid-90s reading about the Hubble telescope sending back a picture of a nickel-sized piece of the sky, and they had just found 20 million new galaxies. Why the entire population of the planet didn't fall to its knees in some kind of awe or swoon of I mean, you could either look at it as this really makes us insignificant, or this really makes us part of something really grand. You know,
I mean,
you could be inflated by that information, or you could be completely deflated.
How can you not grasp that there's another energy, there's an energetic in the universe operating?
Yeah. How can you doubt it?
How can one doubt it?
Yeah. Or the physics speculation that there may be seven other dimensions to reality makes you think about, well, okay, yeah, we live in four dimensions. We see a specific kind of reality, but it's just one kind of reality that allows us to move through our world and survive. But seven more dimensions to reality? I mean, I think it's probably a good thing that they didn't appear in our universe, because think how much harder it would be to find your car keys if there were seven more dimensions to reality.
Maybe eight, maybe nine.
There may be crevices all over the place. And there may, one of those dimensions may be full of lost socks, you know, or one of those dimensions may be where birds go to die. They found the entry point, and they go, because nobody has ever seen where the birds are dying, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Not to mention the elephants. So anyway, once upon a space-time, and it begins with this wonderful quote from Ludwig Wittgenstein, that the world is the mystical. We have a new creation myth being told by our species.
Once upon a space-time.
Yeah, read a little bit of it.
Yes, we do. We have a new creation myth being told by our species, a new story about the origins and workings of the universe. It is the story of the evolution of the cosmos, and therefore a new story about you and me. If there are beings on another planet in a different galaxy, it is their story too. This is Universal Pictures. We'll begin our new story at the very beginning, and even though this is the scientific story of the universe, we can at least start with the first words of the Bible. In the beginning, and since this is a creation myth, we should try to put some appropriate flourishes in. In the beginning, saith the scientists, there was nothing, and it was good. At least we can presume it was good. Nothing could ever be wrong with nothing. According to the scientists, in the beginning, there wasn't even any space, so there was no place to put anything. In the beginning, they say there wasn't any time, so there were no beginnings, no endings, nothing ever got done, and nobody cared. Therefore, let it be said again, it was good. And so it came to pass that 13.7 billion years ago today, well, we can't be sure about today being the actual anniversary of the birth of the universe, but it certainly could have been. 13.7 billion years ago today, there occurred an auspicious event called the Big Bang. But if nothing existed, then what banged? A few people raised this question. A little while later, some scientists decided there must have been something after all. They called it a singularity, which they describe as particle-like and smaller than an atom, but infinitely dense.
There's a wonderful note on that sentance, which says, remember, when scientists say infinitely, they really mean it.
Yes, they really mean it. I know.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, this is our new creation myth, you know. I mean, it doesn't answer the ultimate questions, you know, what was there before, you know, why is this happening? And the ultimate question, I think, why, which may never be answered, at least not to beings of our intelligence, you know, that we just don't have the wherewithal to understand it, which is what the existentialists arrived at. You know, they said the universe is absurd because humans just don't have the smarts to understand it. Why is this happening? What is this life?
You know, these quotes that are interspersed through the book, this is a Zen saying, things are not as they seem, nor are they otherwise.
Yes, I love that.
That's great.
The Zennies, they always have something clever to say.
Consider if your body's made out of atoms and atoms are 99% empty space, what is holding your clothes on?
Yes, it's true. You know, we everything we perceive is made of atoms, and atoms are 99.999% empty space. You know, you blow up the nucleus of an atom millions of times till it's the size of a grain of sand. The electron going around that nucleus will be the size of a dust mote, and it'll be half a mile away. There's hardly any matter to matter, you know. So why don't we just fall through the floor and through the earth? And because it's just a magic act that's going on here. That's what it is. It's a sleight of hand, sleight of stuff. As I think I say in there, not only does if your body's made of atoms and atoms are mostly empty space, what is holding your clothes on? Yeah. Not only does the emperor have no clothes, the clothes hardly have any emperor.
Right. And you wind up with this great Samuel Beckett quote, nothing is more real than nothing. And as the Buddha said, thus shall we view the world, like a star at dawn, a bubble in a stream, a flash of lightning in a summer cloud, a flickering lamp, a phantom, or a dream.
Right. It really is rather insubstantial. And it's so interesting that in a civilization like ours, which is so thoroughly devoted to materialism, our scientists discover that matter may not even exist. You know, E equals MC squared. At the core of matter is energy. One scientist says matter is just gravitationally trapped light. It's all a light show. And yet we take it as all so solid and real. Sokhni Rinpoche, one of my teachers in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, says, you Westerners, you have a real problem. A real problem. You think everything is so real.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
They have much more of a sense of the effervescence of phenomena in Asian wisdom traditions, you know.
Particularly the Tibetans, they laugh a lot.
Yes, they do. And that understanding that it's effervescent and it's momentary and everything is disappearing as it appears gives them that kind of lightness because they aren't stuck anywhere. They can't stick anywhere.
I'm speaking with Scoop Nisker. He's the author of Crazy Wisdom Saves the World Again and Book for a Spiritual Revolution. The website is wesnisker.com or scoopnisker.com, and it's NISKER. And you can get there through the New Dimensions website as well, and that's newdimensions.org. My name is Michael Toms, and you're listening to New Dimensions. Thank you. I'm speaking with Scoop Nisker, and he's the author of a number of books, including The Essential Crazy Wisdom, The Big Bang, The Buddha and the Baby Boom, and Buddhist Nature, and others as well. You can go to the website, scoopnisker.com or wesnisker.com. You can also get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. And Scoop, there's so many wonderful things in Crazy Wisdom Saves the World Again. I was really struck by the numerology piece. Perhaps you could read that for us.
Okay. This is from a chapter called I Love Science and Numerology. I recently read that there are 100 sextillion stars in the universe. Sure, I'll go along with that. Some astronomers must have counted them. Modern science keeps presenting us with these enormous numbers, but most of them are meaningless in the sense of being incomprehensible to our tiny little brains and even tinier perspectives. I've now got so many of these gigantic numbers in my head that I get confused when I'm not near my notes about whether there are an estimated 50 or 100 billion galaxies and whether there are 50 or 100 trillion cells in my body. And sometimes I confuse the two categories. Maybe we will discover that there are exactly as many galaxies in the universe as there are cells in our body. And that will either be a strange coincidence or a hint that reality isn't just random chaos bumping into itself. As scientists present us with all of these big numbers, it's becoming more and more convenient to be a mystic and just see it all as one. Of course, the essential question remains, who's counting?
Who indeed is counting?
Yes.
That's for sure.
That's why in my monologue, I talk about how in the new Jewish Buddhist religion, the Buish religion, our wisdom is transmitted through the use of knock-knock jokes. The disciples come to the master and say,
knock-knock.
And the master answers with the number one spiritual question, who's there? And if you don't get the joke, you have to be reborn over and over again until you do get it.
And it's a gas.
It is a gas. I love this piece in I Love Science about subatomic physics. They're now measuring change. The Buddha, you know, emphasized Nietzsche, the quality of impermanence as being a key to realization, to understanding the universe and living in it happily. And he talked about things changing millions of times in the blink of an eye, which is considered a tenth of a second by scientists. And they're now measuring things that change in a millionth of a trillionth of a second. And they've given a new name to that amount of time. They call it an attosecond. But then they started measuring things in billionths of a trillionth of a second, and they started calling that a zeptosecond. And now they're also measuring things in trillionths of a trillionth of a second, which they call a yoctosecond. So now you've got the physicists talking about atto, zepto, and yocto. Now, my sense of it is that they have stepped into a Marx Brothers routine where the jokes are coming so fast that you realize, there's no holding on at all. And it's pretty funny. Atto, zepto, and yocto.
Really, yes.
All you can do is let go and laugh.
Yeah, for sure. The poem Why I Meditate is a takeoff of our wonderful poet friend Allen Ginsberg.
Yes, it is. He wrote a poem called Why I Meditate, and this is sort of another generational turn on that subject. I meditate because I suffer. I suffer, therefore I am. I am, therefore I meditate. I meditate because there are so many other things to do. I meditate because when I was younger, it was all the rage. I meditate because Siddhartha Gautama, Bodhidharma, Marco Polo, the British Raj, Carl Jung, Alan Watts, Jack Kerouac, Alfred E. Newman, et al. I meditate because I have all the information I need. I meditate because the largest colonies of living beings, the coral reefs, are dying. I meditate because I want to touch into deep time, where the history of humanity can be seen as just an evolutionary adjustment period. I meditate because evolution gave me a big brain, but it didn't come with an instruction manual. I meditate because life is too short and sitting slows it down. I meditate because life is too long and I need an occasional break. I meditate because I want to experience the world as Rumi did or Walt Whitman or as Mary Oliver does. I meditate because now I know that enlightenment doesn't exist, so I can relax. I meditate because of the Dalai Lama's laugh. I meditate because there are too many advertisements in my head and I'm erasing all but the very best of them. I meditate because the physicists say there may be 11 dimensions to reality and I want to get a peek into a few more of them. I meditate because I've discovered that my mind is a great toy. I like to play with it. I meditate because I want to remember that I'm perfectly human. Sometimes I meditate because my heart is breaking. Sometimes I meditate so that my heart will break. I meditate because a Vedanta master once told me that in Hindi my name Niskar means non-doer. I meditate because I'm growing old and want to become more comfortable with emptiness. I meditate because Robert Thurman called it an evolutionary sport and I want to be on the home team. I meditate because I'm composed of 100 trillion cells and from time to time I need to reassure them that we're all in this together. I meditate because it's such a relief to spend time ignoring myself. I meditate because my country spends more money on weapons than all the other nations in the world combined. If I had more courage, I'd probably immolate myself. I meditate because I want to discover the fifth Brahmavihara, the divine abode of awe, and then I'll go down in history as a great spiritual adept. I meditate because I'm building myself a bigger and better perspective, and occasionally I need to add a new window.
Don't we all?
Yes. We need as big a perspective as we can get in these days.
More windows, please.
Yes, and more doors.
Yes. It leads into the next page. I had a wonderful quote from Joseph Campbell. The old gods are dead or dying, and people everywhere are searching, asking, what is the new mythology to be? The mythology of this unified earth as of one harmonious being. Good old Joe.
Yes, that is a great quote. I think that's at the core of what I'm trying to get at in this book. Even with the humor and the playfulness, is the new mythology. And my sense of it is that the story of evolution is a perfect new mythology, an upgrade of our metaphysics, and gives us a whole new sense of who we are. This is the story we're telling ourselves now. So we should find the spiritual gold in it. You know, what is the spiritual message of the story of evolution? And that's what this last piece in the book is about. The Evolution Sutra is about taking the story of evolution somewhat personally or spiritually.
If we could go to that part of the place where it says in that chapter, Be Here While, where it starts with the cover story of a recent issue of Time magazine.
Uh-huh.
And perhaps we could go out with that. We go there and move on through the next page or two. Because it's kind of like, I think in some ways captures essence.
Okay. It's Be Here. What page is it?
On page 173.
Okay. Thank you. The cover story of a recent issue of Time magazine reviewed the findings of cognitive science with the headline, In Search of the Mind. And some people may have been surprised to hear that the mind was lost and may have been even more surprised to learn that the scientists can't find it. The last paragraph of the article sums it up. Despite our every instinct to the contrary, consciousness is not some entity inside the brain that corresponds to self, some kernel of awareness that runs the show. After more than a century of looking for it, brain researchers have concluded that such a self simply does not exist. What? The self does not exist? This is not some esoteric Buddhist insight. This is science as reported in Time magazine. Why wasn't there a nationwide panic? The self that we have come to believe in is a fiction, existential smoke and mirrors. Nature has constructed such an amazing brain that it can run this entire organism all by itself. And just to make sure we feel important, it also fools us into believing that we're in charge. This, my human friends, is your brain on evolution. You know, this, awe is what I always come to at the end of science and at the end of meditation. And I always come into this sense of awe. Just think, Earthlings. It has taken the universe 13.7 billion years to make you. A lot of work went into this being. A lot of suffering and discarded designs and tinkering with particles and forces and sensory systems. And okay, so you're not perfect yet, but you are a piece of the universe that can wonder about itself and move around and say hello. That's a rare occurrence, at least in our neighborhood of the Milky Way. Rejoice. As E.O. Wilson says, the chances of producing a human being through random chance in evolution would be like a hurricane blowing through a junkyard and creating a 747 airplane. There's something going on here. After a little reflection on the story of evolution, I sit in meditation and feel my own existence. I feel my breath and the sensations in my body and know that I am a part of this great show of life now pulsing through my body. Suddenly, the whole mystery of creation is inside of me. And I feel intimate with all and everything. For a while, at least, my innocence is restored and my perception laced with a sense of wonder. What is breath? Sentience? Consciousness? Aliveness? These questions are koans, a means of pointing to the mystery, a way to be here. Wow.
And that was Scoop Nisker. And Scoop, thanks so much for being here with us.
My pleasure, Michael. I always have a great time when I come here to New Dimensions.
It's been fun. Scoop is the author of Crazy Wisdom Saves the World Again, Handbook for a Spiritual Revolution. You can get more information through going to the website westnisker.com or scoopnisker.com. My name is Michael Toms, and you've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3284.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org, or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support, and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hello, I'm Daniel Drayson, author of A New Science of the Afterlife. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about the survival of consciousness after death.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.